Our members and guests, thank you, and welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We're going to begin right away with Representative Zerwas's House File 522. We do not yet have a quorum, so we will not officially bring the meeting to order, but Representative Zerwas, if you would like to begin to present your bill, when we do have a quorum, we will interrupt and officially call the meeting to order. So with that, Representative Zerwas and House File 522.
Mr. Chair, members, a brief introduction for House File 522. I first started working with the Community Action Program in my area, TRICAP, almost 3 years ago now. I'm trying to expand some tax preparation assistance in to my community, and really saw an overwhelming response and success in the Oak River area. And the more I worked with the Community Action Program, I heard more about the programs that they work with. One of the programs that I think is most inspiring is FAME. And it leverages money that individuals in the program save, along with some matching funds, and then in partnership with some financial coaching, and helps individuals save up either for education, for down payment assistance on a new home, or to start a new small business. And so I think the exciting thing about the FAME program is it really stresses the three R's I think that we should be looking for when we look at investment. You know, it stresses results, return on investment, and really serving, in this instance, the rural areas of Minnesota. I want to note the importance of the financial coaching aspect of this, really teaching people the basic fundamentals of financial responsibility and helping people work towards their goals, whether, again, it is saving for an educational opportunity, down payment assistance on a home, or starting with some basic capital to start a new small business. And then the point that $250,000 annually that will be leveraged 3-to-1 and will have that very important coaching aspect to it. And the other thing that I find striking is that with the lack of funds in recent years, there were 8 areas where this program used to serve that currently does not, and trying to use some of these resources to go back into Greater Minnesota to areas that were previously served by the FAME program very successfully. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over for some brief testimony.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I have Pam Johnson, yeah, and Jill Amundson and Elizabeth Thompson.
That's right.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed in whatever order you would like.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Pam Johnson, and I work with Minnesota's statewide Community Action Partnership. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about House File 552, and thanks also to our FAME champion, Representative Zerwas, and co-authors, Representatives Dean, Mack, Liebling, Grunhagen, Hamilton, Murphy, Schoen, and Backer. Thanks for all your support. FAME has had a powerful and lasting impact on the lives of thousands of Minnesotans and has demonstrated a strong return on investment, as Representative Zerwas said, over the past 14 years. Over 3,600 low-income Minnesota households have saved collectively nearly $3.5 million of their own income in matched savings accounts to acquire a long-term financial asset as described, a home, post-secondary education, or a small business. Long-term assets help families to weather life's financial storms and move beyond paycheck-to-paycheck living. And a statewide collaboration delivers FAME, including Bremer Banks, City County Federal Credit Union, Emerge Community Development, Community Action Agencies, the Urban League, Neighborhood Development Alliance, and Leech Lake Tribal Government. Participants deposit $40 per month at local banks, receiving a 3-to-1 match through state and federal funding. It's a true public-private partnership, as these funds leverage local and private resources as well. And as described, participants work with a trained FAME financial coach who you'll hear from in a minute here to complete 22 hours of financial education and asset-specific training. As a coach, a FAME coach in Duluth for 4 years, I especially enjoyed sessions with parents who brought their kids And a favorite memory of mine was working with a young mom who was walking through her budget. And at one point, we were talking about the different items in her monthly expenditures, and her little boy piped up after one expense and said, "Now, Mom, is that a want or a need?" So she had a good laugh, and she was very proud of her son's budding financial skills. Now, your packet has a University of Minnesota return on investment study that talks about the return on investment that was described earlier by Representative Zerwas. Nearly 90% of surveyed famed small businesses are still thriving after 2-plus years, and that's compared to a 44% national average, so double what the national average is. Over 85% of our higher education seekers met their goal or were in process of doing so. There were no reported home foreclosures despite the recent crisis in 2008 and 2009. And public assistance usage decreased dramatically following the program participation. And we believe these outcomes are due to the one-to-one financial coaching and supports that FAME participants receive. The classes alert them to risky consumer products and demonstrate wise financial habits for the lifelong practice, which is passed on to the next generation. So we're here today to thank you for your investment in FAME financial asset building over the past 14 years and seek support for the key coaching aspect of FAME. A current $250,000 annual appropriation supports the FAME bank accounts, but not the key coaching element that makes the program so successful. Some providers have had to halt services, as Representative Zerwas described, due to a lack of adequate coaching funding, while others struggle to maintain services. And this has created gaps in statewide service delivery, as shown in the map in your packets. So the bill provides a $250,000 per year boost to stabilize FAME coaching, enable former and new providers to join, and leverage private and non-state resources. So thank you for your time, and I'd like to now pass on testimony to Jill Amundson, an expert FAME coach, and then Elizabeth Thompson, a successful FAME graduate.
Thank you, Ms. Amundson. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jill Amundson, and I am the Family Services Coordinator at West Central Minnesota Communities Action in Elbow Lake, Minnesota. I'm pleased to be able to speak to you today about FAME. As Pam has discussed, the FAME program has amazing deliverables. It builds people up, helping them to turn their earned income into assets that can take them out of poverty. While savers obviously benefit from the 3-to-1 match, the financial coaching is what makes FAME a success. As FAME coaches, we deliver 12 hours of financial education, 10 hours of asset-specific training, such as home purchase counseling, business plan development, or employment and educational exploration, and ongoing one-to-one coaching individualized for each participant. It is this ongoing relationship that makes the difference for FAME savers. It gives them someone to contact when they have financial questions, support when they have to make those tough decisions, and someone to celebrate their hard work and victories along the way. This is what we see as making the lasting impact in the financial habits of our FAME families. FAME financial coaches receive intensive training using the curriculum entitled Four Cornerstones for Financial Literacy that includes instruction on budgeting to increase savings, debt reduction and asset building, building a good credit rating, and consumer protections. In addition, our network participates in regular and ongoing statewide FAME network training meetings. As providers, we share best practices, stay on top of current financial tools and topics, and support one another's efforts to provide high-quality coaching to our participants. As a FAME coach, I have been fortunate to have assisted several of our FAME savers who are working to start their own business. As part of the asset-specific training, we spend many hours over the course of a year discussing personal and business finances, researching potential markets and strategies, and planning out how to best utilize the FAME savings for the biggest return on their investment. The final product of this is a written business plan that encompasses their short and long-term goals and provides a detailed map on how to achieve them. It is rewarding to see these businesses thriving in our rural communities, knowing that microenterprise will contribute to the success of the family and to our town. One of our FAME education savers, Kesha Anderson, has written a letter regarding her experience in FAME. Ms. Anderson was able to complete her graduate degree in 2008 through the use of her FAME savings. She is now administrator for the Region 4 Mental Health Consortium. Ms. Anderson writes, "The key of this program is that it is not a program that hands out a 3-to-1 return on investments. They partner the savings plan with intensive classroom coursework that covers financial strategies for success, which is essential for every participant regardless of background. FAME provides financial support with education for individuals and families who may otherwise not have funding, knowledge, or the belief that they could own their own home, pursue further education, or go after their dream of starting a small business. For most FAME programs in Greater Minnesota, such as our own rural West Central, support dollars are extremely limited. Many other rural providers, as Pam mentioned, have stopped offering FAME because of this lack of coaching dollars. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Amundson. We do now have a quorum, and with that, Representative Pearson moves approval of the minutes for March 11, 2015. Do we have any additions or corrections to those? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The minutes for March 11 are approved. We are called to order, and the next testifier is Elizabeth Thompson. Before that, Representative Zerwas, would you like to move your bill?
I'll move House File 522 to be laid over for possible inclusion in your bill.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. And now Elizabeth Thompson.
Hello.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, I'm Elizabeth Thompson. My husband and I have a small tree service, which we've had for several years. We have never made much profit, and we were really struggling when we found out about the FAME program. Our FAME coach helped us transform our business. We had so many ideas, but we didn't know which way to go. Through developing a business plan, which we had never done, we were able to narrow down our options. With the coach's help, we decided our best long-term investment was to buy a snowplow with the matching funds to expand the business during winter, which is our slowest time of year. Thanks to the plow, we picked up 30 contracts for snow removal this winter. Even with the lack of snow, this is the first winter that has not been a big financial struggle for us. The classes and coaching have helped us in all areas of our life, not just the business. Before FAME, we didn't know how to save or budget, especially with having an income that fluctuates so drastically from self-employment. Now even our kids love to save. We have a bucket that our whole family puts money in. When we want to do something special, like go on rides at the Mall of America, instead of putting it on a credit card, we count the bucket to see if we have enough. When the kids earn money from doing extra chores, they will run to put it in the bucket instead of buying candy or a cheap toy with the money. FAME taught us all about delaying gratification. Without FAME's savings program, we would not have been able to buy a snowplow, and without the classes and coaching, we would not have had the skills to use the money wisely. Our family will be forever grateful for FAME, and I hope this program will continue so it can transform other families as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. That's it for the testifiers that have signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, Representative Zerwas, anything to clean up before we go to questions?
I don't believe so. I think we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Members of the committee, have any questions for Representative Liebling?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Not really a question. Just I'm a co-author on the bill. I think this is a great program, and I just want to comment that often in this committee I kind of bring up the point of what are the outcomes? Are we looking at outcomes? And this is a program that really has great outcomes. So I think this is a great program, and I hope that we can fund the addition that we need here. So thanks.
Other questions? Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, with that, in closing, I just want to thank Representative Leland for her kind comments. And then just in closing, this really is a proven program that shows how we can leverage these dollars with the 3-to-1 match and provide that financial coach portion that really helps set people on a successful path in a beginning of self, a new journey of kind of rediscovering their self and their potential. And so I hope that we can continue to discuss this program and how to restore it to where it used to be in the months to come. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas, and thank you to the testifiers who came today and for folks in the audience who are supporting this very valuable program. With that, Representative Zerwas renews his motion that House File 522 522 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And House File 522 is held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Zerwas and testifiers. And next up we have Representative Hamilton in House File 1054. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Testifiers
Chairman.
And Representative Hamilton, if you would like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Getting situated here. So I'd like to move House File 1054, and I believe it's going to be held over for possible inclusion, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
So, and to the bill. We do have some testifiers, but just a little bit about the bill. It's, I believe it's appropriation for $19.5 million for five different programs, Mr. Chair. And this was brought to me by Homes for All, a statewide alliance of over 150 organizations representing the entire housing continuum from homelessness prevention to successful home ownership. And I want to share with the committee some interesting homeless data, if you will, to try to bring this in perspective. There's over 14,000 Minnesotans who are homeless every single night. Think about that one. Over 14,000. Half of them are under the age of 21. And the fastest growing group, my friends, the fastest growing group is two-parent households with children. And when they did a survey, over half of them surveyed had some form of mental illness, severe mental illness as well. So the need is great. I won't take up any more of the committee's time because I'd really like for you to hear from the testifiers as well, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Representative Hamilton, we have Sue Aberholden and other testifiers ready to go. Introduce yourself for the record and go in whatever order you would like. Just introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Justin Vorbach, the coordinator of the Southwest Minnesota Continuum of Care, which is a regional planning group addressing homelessness in the 18 counties of Southwest Minnesota. I'm here to talk about HF 1054, specifically the $1 million increase proposed for the Emergency Services Program. In our region, in our January 2014 point-in-time homeless count, we identified 115 homeless households in our 18-county region. Reasons for homelessness in order of frequency are lack of financial resources to afford housing, lost job, family relationship problems, medical problems, inability to find work, mental health or addiction problems, domestic violence, or recent release from an institution. In Southwest Minnesota, homeless households are in one of three places. First, in a car or outdoors or some other place not meant for human habitation. Second, doubled up with others in an overcrowded situation where they could be asked to leave at any moment. Or third, using a short-term motel voucher while they try to address their housing crisis and find stable housing as soon as possible. Currently, our only state funding to address homelessness is $37,500 per year from the Minnesota Emergency Services Program, which can only be used in four of our 18 counties, those served by Heartland Community Action Agency. In all of 2014, Heartland was able to help 22 households with this funding by providing short-term motel stays and supportive services. The assisted households included 28 adults and 24 children. In Heartland's four counties, outreach staff meet with 31 households per month in need of emergency shelter. In their most recent reporting year, Heartland met with 1,912 households experiencing a housing crisis and were only able to assist 20% of these households. Of the 80% not assisted, the most common reason was that no funding was available. Increasing funding to the Minnesota Emergency Services Program would help an estimated 2,000 additional Minnesotans, 2,000 individual Minnesotans with temporary emergency shelter and services. In Southwest Minnesota, these resources would allow us to better meet the needs of our homeless neighbors in all 18 of our counties as we work to return them to stable housing as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vorbach. And just for folks, I apologize that we are a little bit crowded in. We have some friends up in room 400 South, and I'm told that we are currently setting up rooms, our space down in room 181. So if you're standing and you'd like a spot to sit, if you go down to the first floor right out of the elevators and go straight ahead, There's a room set up there that they're going to be having seating available. So if you don't have a spot to sit or if you're not comfortable, if you'd like to scoot down there, they should have that room available in just a couple of minutes. So apologize for folks who are uncomfortable or don't have a spot to sit. So we try to accommodate you. Ms. Abderholden.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden. And I'm actually wearing two hats today.
No hard hat,
yes, figuratively speaking. Although you'll all be getting one later today since it's Mental Health Day on the Hill. a little one. So I'm here actually as the Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota and as a board member of Hearth Connection. And NAMI knows all too well how important it is to have safe, affordable housing with supports when you live with a serious mental illness. And we also believe that the high numbers of people with mental illnesses who are homeless are just simply unacceptable. The Housing with Supports for Adults with Serious Mental Illnesses program is excellent, and NAMI strongly supports the increased funding for it of $5 million. It's not a group home. It's not an institution. It's a home. A home in an apartment building or scattered site where people can obtain the support they need to live well in the community. In 2014, you funded 422 apartment units in 19 different housing projects. The housing support services include things such as tenancy support, front desk coverage, and connecting people to mental health services. There can be communal space to break the isolation and even meals if needed. When we look at the log jams in our mental health system, it's a front door and a back door issue. Creating more supportive housing enables people to leave higher cost settings and return to their communities with the supports they need to assist in their recovery. Hearth Connection is an agency that applies for grants on behalf of county collaborations from the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund allocated through the Department of Human Services. I'm here to support the $6.5 million increase contained in the bill. Supportive housing is an evidence-based practice for ending homelessness for people who need services. This money provides housing supports in six regional county collaborations, 34 counties in all, including three tribal nations. Currently, none of these funds are allocated to the central and western parts of the state. We know that there are people experiencing long-term homelessness across the state, and I believe that this increase, $6.5 million increase of this fund, would truly take this program statewide. This funding represents an investment in the lives and well-being of children and adults facing tremendous barriers to stability, health, and contributions to the community. So on behalf of both Hearth Connection and NAMI Minnesota and the providers of the program, I hope that you will support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Next, we have Mary Chung from Solid Ground.
Hi, my name is Mary Chung, and I'm the Director of Development at Solid Ground. I'm here today to talk about the $3 million increase to the Transitional Housing Program that's part of House File 1054. I live in White Bear Lake in Chairman Dean's district. And I'm here today not only representing myself as the constituent, but also the families and supporters of Solid Ground, which is a nonprofit that provides both site-based and scattered site housing or supportive housing for families experiencing homelessness in suburban Ramsey and Washington counties. Families in our transitional housing programs, which receive funding from the Transitional Housing Program at DHS, can stay for up to 2 years and receive a combination of rental assistance and supportive services to help them achieve housing stability and further self-sufficiency. We have services for adults focused around education and employment, parenting and budgeting. We provide children with early learning opportunities and one-on-one after-school tutoring to help them with their homework and develop a love of learning. What we're talking about here today is people, vulnerable people, people who are more often than not born into poverty, who have lived on the brink trying to make the ends meet, and when something happens and the ends don't come together, for whom everything falls apart because they don't have the advantage of healthy or powerful networks to help them through transitions in their lives. That is what transitional housing is for. I'd like to share a story with you today of one of the many families I've had the privilege of meeting at Solid Ground. Alyssa is a 24-year-old mother of three. Her mom was involved in drugs and prostitution, and Alyssa and her sister moved between family and foster care for most of their childhood, suffering abuse along the way. In talking to her, it was amazing that she could even remember all the places that she had been because she bounced around so much as a child. She had her first child at age 18, and after two more children in an abusive relationship, ended up living in a domestic violence shelter. In her 18 months at Solid Ground, she completed her supportive programs and achieved her goal of obtaining a GED. She continued her education at Century College, and in addition to working and raising her children, and she is now, with her children, stably housed. Like the rest of us, she has goals and dreams and want her children to be happy and not have to go through what she went through and to not have to participate in the systems in the way that she did. Like Alyssa, many of the families that we serve have complex needs that cannot be wished away. Many of the parents we serve first experienced homelessness as children, and a vast majority of the families that we serve have experienced domestic violence. Many also have mental or chemical health issues. Solid Grounds works with the families to address these issues and to connect them with the resources in the community that they can use long-term beyond their time with us. Homelessness is a problem in Minnesota, and it's a big one. Each year, we count the number of men, women, and children experiencing homelessness in our state. And each year, we are reminded that the scope of the problem is far more significant than the resources that have been allocated to deal with it. The problem of homelessness has a solution, though, and that solution is housing. Affordable housing, supportive housing. Increased funding for the transitional housing program would mean that we could end homelessness for 400 more families in our state. And it would mean that we could provide more services to the most needy families that we serve so that they don't continue to fall through the cracks and continue the cycle of poverty and homelessness that we have today. Please support House File 1054, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. We'd also like to just state that the Homeless Youth Act as well would be a part of this, but it is a standalone bill, and I think it's being heard next, Mr. Chairman. So any questions, we're happy to entertain.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Is there anyone from the audience who'd like to testify on behalf of the bill? And no one's signed up with pages. Seeing none of the questions or comments from committee members for Representative... Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you, Representative Hamilton, for this bill. I'm on the bill, too, and as are several others, and this is really something good we can do, and I think the time is good to fund this thing and get it out around the state, so thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Purcell.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton, I think you've got a really good creative batch of programs here, and I note that some of it of this is also a partnership with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and are we seeing sort of the parallel bills going through to ask them to step up with some of the capital dollars that will support the services here?
Representative Hamilton.
Well, I was simply going to say we're phoning a friend, Mr. Chairman, but the answer is yes. We are working with and on that as well.
Well, great, because I know it's always been a balance, and at one time we built a lot more and then didn't have the services for them to be successful, and we've learned you have to balance it out in order to really have it work for the communities and the people served. And so I'm glad to hear there's a partner bill moving through.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments for Representative Hamilton? Well, I just want to commend you for all the work that you've done on this and bringing the different coalition groups together, and for the advocates who are here today. You have a excellent chief author with Representative Hamilton, so you're being very well represented with the advocates here at the Capitol as well as the author of the bill, and wish you all the best, and thank you for coming to the Capitol today for this and for the next Representative Wills bill. We do appreciate that, and it does make a difference. Hopefully we've been able to accommodate all of the folks up in 400 South and down in 181 so that we can connect with that. Any final thoughts, Representative Hamilton?
You know, Mr. Chairman, no, thank you for the kind words, and, you know, I simply ask for everybody's support, and thank you for everybody for showing up as well.
With that, Representative Hamilton renews his motion that House File 1054 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House File 1054 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Bill. Thank you, Representative Hamilton and testifiers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, members, we're going to continue on with the next bill. We would ask that you take your conversations to the alcove, to the hallway outside. Please, folks in the audience, if you could please take the conversations outside. We're going to move ahead with the next bill. I do thank you for coming today. Also, want to thank the folks that are upstairs in 400 South and down in 181, especially the folks from Hill Murray High School and Brandon who are here. And please don't break anything on the way out, Hill Murray folks. Thank you. Appreciate that. So have a safe trip directly back to Hill Murray where you're going to engage in your studies very quickly, I'm sure. All right. Next up, we have House File 581 with Representative Wilkes. And she is making her way up. I will actually officially move House File 581 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. We will have House File 581 before us. We have several testifiers who are here today, and we have no amendments that have been presented, so we will move forward with the testimony on House File 581. With that, I see that Representative Wills has taken her place. Welcome to the committee, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we are ready to hear your bill, which has been moved before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your patience as I was just presenting another bill in my other committee. So I'll try to catch my breath here. All right, so House File 581 is the Homeless Youth Act, and I literally ran up the stairs, sorry. And the bill does a couple of things. The main two things is it increases the appropriation from $6 million in a biennium to 10. And the other change is changing the definition of a homeless youth from ages 16 to 21 to the federal definition of 16 to 24. Just so you have an idea of what the bill does. And I wanted to give a little background on why I believe that this funding increase is important. From Wilder research in 2012, on any given night, there's about 4,000 homeless youth in Minnesota. And we also have some information from DHS that they received over about 51 applications when allocating out the Homeless Youth Act funding in 2013. And they received, in those applications, about $20 million in requests to be able to reach these homeless youth. And about $10 million of those requests DHS deemed as viable needs and worthy of funding. But unfortunately, we only had the $6 million appropriation, which is why we're looking at increasing it up to the $10 million to reach those additional needs. Homelessness in this age range is happening at a very critical time in the youth's development and transitioning and learning how to be a functioning adult. And a lot of these youth are facing this situation, having run away from home due to either sexual abuse or another form of abuse. 42% have experienced physical abuse, 34% have experienced parental neglect, 27% have experienced sexual abuse. And a lot of the time, it's a parent's mental illness or chemical dependency that's interfering with them, or the family might be homeless. And a lot of times, the homeless youth are facing that situation because they've aged out of the foster care system. And we're also looking at, with the change in the age definition, the reason behind that is because currently youth between the ages of 21 and 24 are getting services to help support them in that transition and try to get them to a self-sufficient point in life, but it's requiring a lot more paperwork in keeping track of all of the forms. And so I'm hoping, and we're hoping, that this would streamline that process and get the support to those youth. And wanted to talk a little bit about some of the services that are provided to these youth. A lot of it is counseling and encouraging the youth and just assessing where they're at in their situation. And the first thing that they look at is, can the youth go back home and can they be with their family? Because that would be certainly the preferred option. But a lot of times that's not an option. And so there's also emergency shelter beds, supportive housing, street outreach, and drop-in centers to reach these students. And that was something that I found very compelling about this proposal, is that youth who are facing homelessness are not going to be attending school as regularly and can really suffer in their educational experience, which is going to have lasting effect on their ability to be successful in life. So I have several testifiers. I don't want to monopolize all the time here. And I wanted to have Marie Ellis from Catholic Charities give some history on the bill and cover anything I missed. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Ellis. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marie Ellis. I work in the Office for Social Justice at Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis, and I'm here to just provide some additional context and history on the bill. First, I want to thank this committee for your previous support of the Homeless Youth Act. Specifically, I want to thank, of course, Representative Wills for being our excellent chief author this year, Representative Helverson, who has carried the bill in previous years and continues to be a wonderful supporter, and then our other co-authors on this committee, including yourself, Representative Dean, Representative McDonald, and Representative Zerwas. Thank you so much for your support. As Representative Hamilton noted, the funding for the Homeless Youth Act is also a part of the Homes for All bill that was just heard, but the bill in front of you then also includes that policy change with the age language. The Homeless Youth Act funds can serve five different purposes. They serve drop-in centers for homeless youth, emergency shelters, street outreach, transitional housing, and supportive housing. And Homeless Youth Act funding, the state funding, is just one piece of funding for all of those different services. There's, of course, also federal funding, county funding, individual contributions, corporate contributions, United Way funding, and all of those things. One note I'd like to make is to let you all know that youth service providers statewide are working together to explore some different creative models of other ways that we can serve youth, specifically in greater Minnesota, where it might not make sense to have a brick and mortar shelter or drop-in center, but something like host homes or something else that would help youth benefit and stay in the community that they know. Another note, I think a lot of you are familiar with the Safe Harbor Ask, and just want to make sure you know that advocates on the Homeless Youth Act and advocates on the Safe Harbor side are definitely working together to make sure that our efforts are complementing each other. To that end, one part of the Safe Harbor Ask this year would fund 18 youth outreach workers around the state, which we know is one of the best ways to connect with youth. And those workers will be cross-trained, so they'll know how to work with homeless youth and sexually exploited youth and trafficked youth and make appropriate referrals based on who they're talking with. Catholic Charities operates Hope Street, which is a shelter for homeless youth in Minneapolis. And last week we had three youth come and talk to some of their legislators, including Representative Wills. And so I just wanted to paint a little bit of a picture for you. None of the youth were able to testify today, but I just remember one of them last week came to the Capitol wearing her work uniform because she was going to work right after that. And so she had on a polo shirt with the organization's logo, her lanyard, you know, that had the logo on it, with her ID card. And she was really excited about her. It was going to be her first day of work. And it's just a reminder, I think, to all of us that we don't know who homeless youth are. They are the people that serve us our coffee in the morning. They're the people who check us out when we buy new clothes, and we have no idea that they're staying at a youth shelter and that they don't have supportive family members. In 2014, Hope Street had to turn away 1,050 unduplicated youth from our emergency shelter for lack of space. We run at 99% capacity. Essentially, we're always full. And so we know that increased funds are incredibly valuable to help youth. I'll just leave you with the thought that thousands of youth right now in Minnesota are wondering where they're going to sleep tonight. And one of the ways that you can help them answer that question is by supporting the Homeless Youth Act.
Thank you so much. Who'd like to testify next?
Sure.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Erdman. I'm a community services emergency housing advocate for Lakes and Pines Community Action. We are a recipient of Homeless Youth Act funding. With those funds, we are able to provide transitional living programming to at-risk homeless youth in Aiken, Carlton, Chisago, Isanti, Kanabec, Mille Lacs, and Pine Counties. We are able to give these youth an opportunity to reshape and take back their lives by providing resources and life skills that they need to become productive members of our communities. I'd like to share with you a youth success story. In 2013, a young married couple with an infant contacted Lakes and Pines. They were living in their first apartment on just one income, barely getting by. Money was tight, and they were barely making ends meet. They contacted Lakes and Pines because they were facing an eviction and were requesting financial assistance with getting current on their rent. They'd fallen behind because the husband had switched jobs to a higher-paying job, and they hadn't realized how the delay of receiving that first paycheck would affect their ability to pay rent, a situation anyone new to the job force but without guidance from a caring adult could find themselves in. With the Homeless Youth Act funding, Lakes and Pines was able to provide ongoing rental assistance to prevent eviction and possible homelessness, as well as case management. The challenges with their rent was only the latest issue. They had been struggling in all areas of their life and did not know where to turn or how to get on their feet, and they desperately wanted to be responsible parents. They were busy juggling one crisis only to move on to the next. Once this family was stably housed, they were able to slow down and focus on other areas in their lives that they wanted to work on and improve. They wanted to provide safe and stable housing for their child, and they wanted to provide a good future for that. They felt like they would never get out of debt. So through the case management, they learned skills such as budgeting, life skills, setting goals, and were provided with referrals and resources to programs that would help them out in the community. This couple had identified some concerns and goals. Some of their concerns were being afraid of losing their housing, having enough money to eat. They both wanted to finish high school. They hadn't done that. They both had aspirations to go to college, learning how to cook, paying their rent and bills on time, and saving for emergencies. The family had set goals around each of those areas, and through their time with our program had successfully completed each of them. They are now debt-free. They're ahead on their rent. They're able to buy and prepare food each month with some meal planning. They have an emergency fund as well as additional savings account for their son. They're working on getting their high school diplomas. Without the support of the Homeless Youth Act funding, this young family would likely have found themselves in one crisis after another. The Homeless Youth Act is the reason they were able to get on their feet and travel towards successful adulthood rather than eviction or long-term homelessness for them and their child. Some of the unique needs that I wanted to share with you for rural Minnesota. In our area of the state, there's a lack of resources and providers for homeless youth. many of the homeless youth are directed our way by the school system because that's really their only connections. Transportation is a huge barrier. Many of our youth don't even have driver's license because they don't have vehicles, which makes it very difficult for them to find a job. Most of us have to travel distances to work. You know, jobs are limited. And the public transportation that we do have is unreliable and it's limited. We also have a significant lack of affordable housing. So thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. And finally up, we have Francie Mathis from the Office of Economic Opportunity of Minnesota Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Francie Mathis, Department of Human Services. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've been asked to go through the Homeless Youth Act report that is in your packet. And that was a report due to the legislature as part of the Homeless Youth Act legislation. So I'm just going to do a quick overview, and then if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. The legislation requested a list of the areas of the state with the greatest need for services and housing for homeless youth, and details about the grants that we made, the distribution of funds through the state based on population need, and then any outcomes that that we could collect. So that's what is included in this report. On page 6, you'll see the identification of needs section. Some of this information was already given by Representative Wills, but I think it's important to say in the toward the bottom of that page in the geographic area, 4 in 10 youth or 42% of the youth that were discovered in the Wilder survey were from Greater Minnesota. So with the increase in funds, our office really and DHS really looked at spreading out the funding to Greater Minnesota because most of the services were focused in the metropolitan area where, of course, most of the children live, but we were tried to focus out in the other communities and made a good step forward, but we weren't able to fund something in every community. On page 7, the grant awards, we did a competitive request for proposal, received 49 applications. Then last year, last session, there was an additional $1 million appropriated. So rather than doing another RFP, which is a time-consuming process, and we hadn't funded the $20 million that were requested, we did a request for additional funds to those current grantees that were already receiving funding. Many of those grantees were doing startup projects, and we hadn't funded anyone at the level they actually needed, so it was an excellent opportunity. 24 of the 30 grantees we funded did request additional funds, and we awarded those funds to 21 of the applicants. On the next page, on page 8, is a description of the different activities that we've already discussed briefly. But on page 9, it's kind of interesting to look at the chart there, the top chart, the bar chart that talks about the increase in from 2012 and 13 with the additional funds. And figure 2 at the bottom of the page talks about the different types of funding that we funded, the different types of activities we funded. As I said, the funding was given out to many new grantees who were unfamiliar with serving youth or didn't have services in a particular area. So there was a significant startup, especially in out Greater Minnesota and in the suburban metro area. So on page 11, if you look at the pie chart there, that kind of talks about the funding distribution by region. And you can see the Twin Cities is 46%, which is appropriate because that is the largest population center. But we did make a 14% increase in suburban metro and 35% increase in Greater Minnesota. There is initial data available on page 12. Because these were startup and it was new funding, we only were able to collect about 6 months of data so far. So that information is included on page 12. And then we have the statute in there. And then at the end, the last page maybe, is the list of Homeless Youth Act grantees and where they're from. So that's a quick high overview. Are there any questions that I can answer?
Thank you for the review, Ms. Mathis. Are there any questions? I just had one on we went through the legislation that asked you to do the report and just kind of looked at the list the areas of the state with the greatest need for services and housing for homeless youth. Is there anything that is particularly new or changes from what we've seen before or anything particularly to focus in as we look at that particular piece of the report that you were asked to do?
Mr. Chair, what we found is as we've started to develop some programs, as we were talking about here with Lakes and Pines, now we're finding more children, more of the homeless youth, because they've been hidden, especially in the more rural areas. They've been doing a lot of couch hopping around, and I think school personnel and school liaisons sometimes knew about it, but there wasn't anything. There weren't any resources. So the more we have been able to get out in other parts of the state, the more youth that we're finding that really need services.
Thank you, Ms. Mathis. And that's anecdotally what we have been hearing for many years and hearing from shelters and from service providers across the state, that we're seeing a lot of that just sort of showing up, that couch hopping and people just kind of showing up at places and receiving services. But it's good to see it included in your report so that we have some data behind that. There are other questions or comments? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Mathis, I was glad to see that we're expanding to more services in other parts of the state because that was an underserved area. But I do notice on page 6 in your terms of the findings of your study, it says that the number of homeless youth of color is disproportionately high compared to their prevalence in the general populations of Minnesota youth. That 70% were African American, American Indian, Asian, Hispanic, or mixed race, compared to 24% of all Minnesota youth, so that's three times the prevalence. And in your dispersion of money, were you able to get some providers to step up that would really focus on those populations as well?
Ms. Mathis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did make an effort, but again, this was the first step of spreading out, and we did not put, we asked the question in the RFP about the, the minorities served by the various organizations, and we did fund two tribal governments for specific, culturally specific projects on those reservations, but beyond that, we have not. So that is an area that we could improve in our next RFP to specifically focus a little more in on that.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I wonder, Ms. Mathis, whether we need to do some special outreach into those communities to, maybe look at some service providers who have not traditionally been in housing. It's no denigration of the current housing programs, but they do tend to be more oriented, I think, towards mainstream populations, and our minority-serving social service agencies haven't stepped up as much into the housing realm. And do you think we need to do some special outreach or some, mentorship with the other successful programs or some other ways to help fill that gap?
Ms. Matt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is one area that needs to be improved. Again, this is like newish, so we've made a good beginning, but we haven't really accomplished as much as I wish we had. We do have an FTE request with this bill, and with a homeless youth specialist, we would be able to send that person out to help organizations who have typically not been either youth serving specifically or housing specific programs to develop that, as well as sending that person out to unserved areas of the state to help organizations there develop youth programming. Because serving youth, we have found, is very different than serving adult homeless people. Developmental differences make that a big difference.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Representative Wills for taking leadership on this. It's vitally important. We share a school district that we represent, and it's definitely an issue in our school district. And I think, to the points that have been made by other speakers, that taking this on as suburban legislators, it was really important for me, because we really made a statement, I think, in the last legislative session that this is a statewide issue, and we had bipartisan support, we had statewide support, because I think all of us are hearing about these issues. And in terms of the developmental needs of this particular population, I'm so pleased. I love when bills keep getting better and better, so thank you, Representative Wilt, to see the age of 24 listed on there. We've heard many times in this committee about the importance of recognizing brain development. We know that brain development continues for youth until they're 25, and these young people are making big life decisions, and we want to be sure that they've got the supports in place so that we can continue to put them on a path to prosperity. So thank you so much for your leadership, and I'm very supportive.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Ms. Ellis. Do you have numbers, the financial numbers of what is donated throughout all the churches and the business community, and what they spend annually or donate annually to help end homeless youth?
I'm sure we do have that number. I don't have it with me right now, but I could certainly get that to you in the next few days.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Do you have an approximation, and do we know, and even to the author, do we know how much, this is a very important issue, and it's not just government involved. As you know, churches, nonprofit groups, major Fortune 500 companies in Minnesota have called this to be some of their top priorities in helping end the homeless youth. So I was just curious how many millions, and I would presume it's in the millions, I would hope that it's in the hundreds of millions, based upon the generosity of the Minnesotans and the parish, the churches and synagogues throughout our state, and the generosity of the businesses. So do you have any kind of a number that annually, what you can expect from the business community, the churches, and the nonprofit groups?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I don't have it with me, and I don't want to throw out a number that I think is right and have it not be right. But I do know that there's a group called Youth Moving Forward, which is a lot of the service providers that get together and talk about some of these issues. And they're working on figuring out overall with all of the providers how much of their funding comes from different sources, so that we can get back to all of you and say the Homeless Youth Act is X percent of the money that serves these programs overall. And I'll certainly get back to you with information specific to Catholic Charities and our shelter.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I fully support this bill. When I turned 18, I turned 18 March 1st, 1995, and on March 9th, I decided I was going to leave my house for reasons that we don't need to go into. So I went to school on that Friday and explained to my girlfriends what had happened and what was going on, and they said, well, we just need to get you out of there. And a group of girls that had no idea what we were going to do, and I moved out of my house that night, left without even knowing where I was going to stay the rest of my time during high school. But as girlfriends do, we just thought, well, you can stay at my house one night and you can stay at my house another night. And we thought that was going to be a feasible plan, and I don't really think it would have been. And a family from my high school, she worked in the library, had overheard what was going on and what we were planning, and her family opened up her house to me so that I could stay there. The daughter, their eldest daughter, was going to college, so I was able to use their room, and they took me in as one of their children until I graduated high school. But it is a reality, and I look back at that time, and what if that family had not opened up to me? I really don't think it would have been feasible to live the last 3 months of my high school years hopping on couches and hoping that parents would not get sick of me eating their food and using their utilities and such, and trying to figure out how to get to school and finish that. And then after that, I graduated. I went to go live with my grandparents until college started. But homeless youth is all over the place, and it's not rarely talked about. And I don't talk about it very often because, you know, it's one of those experiences that you can bring back to the legislature and say, you know, I went through this, and it is hard. And it just pains me that there are so many people out there, so many children out there that are living in cars or by the grace of just the kindness of strangers sometimes. And sometimes those youth, it's not the kindness of strangers. They're pulled into sex trafficking and horrible situations in order to survive and to stay warm for the night. And we know that Minnesota winters are extremely cold. And as resilient as we are, we'll try to find any way we can to possibly survive. And thankfully, none of those situations happened to me, but these are situations, those that I mentioned, that happen to numerous, numerous individuals. So,
thank you, Representative Franson. Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson, thank you for that. I am so moved by that. I'm sure everybody in the room is, and very tough to follow that one. But thank you for sharing that. You know, I think so often, you know, for the people listening, those of us who serve on Health and Human Service committees, we do hear a lot of stories about how tough people's lives are. And, you know, I think a lot of times it can be very emotionally draining to hear those stories. And I think but often we recognize that they're sort of there, but for the grace of God go I, right? And that's kind of what you're talking about, Representative France, and I really appreciate that. I also am very, very glad to see this program. I think that the fact that we're finding all these homeless youth shows that the private sector, the charitable sector, is, you know, as wonderful as Minnesotans are, it doesn't meet the need. And we keep hearing from our state economist. We heard recently in the Ways and Means Committee, again, she said, with the way our population is changing, we're an aging population, and what we need for our future is to make sure that every citizen is productive. We need to think about productivity of our people. And here are our youth and our future. And if we don't help them to be productive, it's not only, you know, shame on us, but it's also shooting ourselves in the foot in terms of our future in the state. Because we need everybody. We need to help people who have mental illness challenges. We need to catch that and help those people to be productive. We need to catch our youth that might have, you know, grown up in a home where they didn't have a proper safety net and need that extra push and support. I mean, this is all such important stuff. When I originally raised my hand, I really just wanted to ask a question about the report. And I noted that in the report you say that slightly more than half had a serious mental illness, with depression very common, and then slightly more than a third had a chronic physical health condition, most often high blood pressure, chronic lung or respiratory problems. So now we have, with Obamacare and with the expansions of Medicaid that we did in the state, and we're, you know, really working on that, are we getting these youth signed up for health care, and are we helping them access health care services under this program as well?
Ms. Mathis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the programs all provide some level of case management, and that is, and assessment. And so those are, of course, early questions that happen and things that we now have an ability to affect. So, yes, absolutely, we're connecting the kids up. It's a matter of finding the kids, and then once we have, once we've developed a little rapport with them, then, you know, they are getting connected to services and getting health care and getting to counselors, as Representative Will said.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Franson?
And on a lighter note, I tried to write my own excuses when I needed to leave school, and I was unable to do so.
Oh, all right. Well,
I still needed the guardian to, you know, who I was living with to sign off on that. I thought, shucks.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? I don't know if I asked that before, but I'd ask it now. If not, any concluding remarks, Representative Wells?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the time today and for just the positive response. And I really appreciate the comments that were brought up about how important it is to reach these kids and to get them the services and support that they need, especially just having that caring adult in their lives and to help protect them from falling prey to things like sex trafficking, which is a huge problem. And also the point about the private funding and donations as well. I think there are a lot of churches that are helping to fund programs like this as well. I know I visited a church recently that partners with a program called, I think it's called Safe Families in Minnesota, which does a similar type of effort. And I believe that the problem is beyond the scope of either the government or the private sector, and that's why we need to partner together to leverage both sources to reach these youth, to get them onto a path to self-sufficiency and to be able to live successful and prosperous lives here in Minnesota, because that's the goal. That's the goal for each one of these youth, is to get them to a point where they're not dependent on services, they're not struggling to get by, but that they can live successful lives. So thank you for listening, and look forward to your support.
Thank you, Representative Wills, for your work on the bill. Thanks to the advocates and testifiers who are here today for working on this. The bill's unamended, and with that, I will renew my motion that House File 581 be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. 581 is held over. Representative Wills, I want to apologize for starting before you got here. I did not realize that you were, in fact, sprinting up the stairs and had to begin out of breath. That was not
You're
fair
forgiven.
Of me. I apologize for that. With that, members,
Thank
we
you
are
time.
Adjourned.